So hello and welcome everybody to another episode of Open Studio. I'm your host, Martina Flor. And in this show, I have the honor to have Donald Rose with me. Donald is an art director, typographic designer, creative entrepreneur who sets up and runs independent projects together with other professionals. He's the author of Don't Read This Book, Time Management for Creative People. And he's writing another book right now, which we will speak about today for sure. But first, I want to say hello to you. Hi, Donald. How are you doing today? Thank you so much for coming on the show.
Hi, Martina. Thank you for inviting me. I'm happy to be here. Well, actually, not really be here, but in this location, in this digital room.
So, Donald, I'm really excited to have you on the podcast today. We have been speaking about it just before we got on the show, because among other things, the topic we're going to dive deep into today is one of my favorite topics. I'm very passionate about it myself because I know that it has changed my life and the way I approach my projects. Mm-hmm. And I know that the topic we're going to touch on today is a topic that many of our listeners struggle with. So our listeners are lettering artists, illustrators, creatives, and they struggle with this topic, which is productivity. Yes. So I would like to start right there.
Okay.
I normally start with a strong question that hopefully will open a few venues of conversation for us. Mm-hmm. And the question is, why do creatives struggle with productivity? And what are some of the common issues that you have observed?
Well, I think because as a creative, there are so many things that are nice to do. There are so many things every time there pops up a new idea and you're talking to people and you think, oh, this is nice to do. Let's go on and do this. And yeah. When you're starting a project, it keeps on, most of the time, ideas popping up all the time. And that's also the nice thing about it. That's what I like about this, about what we're doing. But that's also the difficulty about it because you get distracted all the time and your to-do list with all new ideas piled up. And that makes it difficult to get some overview about it.
Yeah.
So I think that's a big struggle. And I knew this because I was a teacher for a long time. And I found out that a lot of students had problem with that time management. Yeah, most of the time we're starting someone and then we're waiting a long time. And then, oh, now it's almost time and let's do something. And then, oh, now it's too late. And maybe you have to, you can organize your project in a different way that is less stressful and also that you can realize something.
Yeah, I can totally resonate with this. And I see many creatives and artists struggling with this because, you know, there's so many in my area, for instance, lettering. I often teach or I run courses in lettering. And what often happens with lettering and what with every other creative discipline is that there's not only one way of solving a problem or approaching a project, right? There's several ways of doing something. And normally, as you start a project, you start brainstorming all these ideas and you have all these different venues that you can explore, right?
Yeah.
And oftentimes this is what holds back many creatives and many artists. It's like, okay, which one is the right one?
Yeah.
Which direction is the one I should take and develop further, right? So I was wondering, in your case as a creative, what were the specific challenges that motivated you to explore time management for creatives? Where everything started?
Yo, that's a long time because, most of things, they build up. And as I said, after teaching for a long time, mm-hmm. Then I quit it because I got a family. And that was also, I didn't have time. I had to make choices. Mm-hmm. That was maybe the biggest thing that I realized. It's nice to have all those ideas and to work on all these things. But I have to make choices because if I don't make choices, it all keeps floating around. So I have to know what I want to do. And in that way, you find out, okay, maybe you have to set some goals somewhere. Where do we want to go? And don't make that goals too narrow and also not too wide, but keep them somewhere in between that you have some kind of direction. We're going more or less that way. And then you can say, okay, what's from everything I'm doing or what I'm sketching or what I'm making, what fits in this direction? And then when you're keeping closer to that direction, you can see, oh, this is good, this is not good. And so you have to make choices all the time. check if it's still in the right direction where you're going, where you're heading.
Hey, real quick, you know that I don't run any ads on this podcast and I don't sell anything. The only ask I could ever have is that you help me spread the word. Let's empower more lettering artists, illustrators, and creatives to make a living with their skills, create beautiful work, and build a thriving business doing what they love. The key to making this happen is if you could take just a moment to rate, review, and share this podcast. It's as simple as a 10-second review or one tap of the thumb. Your support will mean the world to me, and more importantly, it could change the world for someone else. Now, back to the show. It's so interesting because what you're saying is, in a way, is starting by the end result and not so much by the next thing I want to be doing, right? So you first think of the end result, my goal, my vision, or where I want to go as a creative, and then work backwards from that, right?
Yeah, that's more or less the idea. I was doing taekwondo that time, and my teacher told us, "Yeah, you're in the field." And most time, you said, "Okay, I'm going to start this fight, this 2 minute round of trying to make as many points." But you say, "Well, you can also think about, okay, at the end, I want to win. So let's see, I'm at the end, and I want to win. And so what I have to do in these 2 minutes to win? So I'll have to look at my opponent and see how I can." What will be my strategy to do this fight? So sometimes I pick up a lot of ideas not from designing but from other things you do. But that's the same with designing. You want to go somewhere. You want, in the end, we want a client who has a result that works for the client. And then you can say, okay, what should be the strategy to go there, and also to make the best of it. So not only good for the client, but also some nice project to work on and to make it even. So work backwards. That was also.
I'm always positioning myself in the side of listeners, thinking like, well, that makes a lot of sense. Like, it's not so much about like what I feel like doing right now, but it's a lot more about like being intentional about what you're doing, so that this becomes an instrument to take you there where you want to go, right?
Yeah.
But what happens oftentimes is that this vision, this place, or this, what you call winning in Taekwondo, is not so clear for some creatives, right?
No.
So how can one of our listeners start thinking about, you know, what is winning? How do I define winning for me?
good question. Yeah, I was thinking about another example that I knew from some host who's organizing meetings. And she always starts a meeting to ask everybody, the whole circle, okay, at least when we finish this meeting, what is the thing you want to have discussed?
Oh, yeah.
And so everybody starts with what he hopes or she hopes what they hope they will have said or what have been discussed during the meeting. And so I think it's also, and that's a nice thing about having a goal that's not really that specific. Then there's always room to flow a little bit to the left or to the right or to the middle or to adjust it because there are always bumps and things on the road that makes it difficult or things change or there are always things you have to adapt. And the moment you keep your end result, like Taekwondo, it's really, we want to win. That's quite clear. But most of the time in designing, it's more, we want to go somewhere in this direction. So I think what you should do is, as I said, have a direction, but not really, really make it in the beginning already clear, but more have an idea, some kind of fake balloon in your head. Yeah, in the end, we should have something like this, and it could be a book or a website or but at least we should tell this story.
You know that just to share something that I often work with my students and specifically inside my coaching program, it has to do about setting a vision for your business, which I think that oftentimes for me, when I started my business as a lettering artist and I started freelancing as a lettering artist, I just thought, okay, I'm just gonna get a tax number and start freelancing and do any job that comes my way and try to make it work, right? And throughout the 13 years that I've been doing this, you know, I came to develop kind of like a vision for what I want to do, a vision that is like what keeps me, you know, what keeps me going through the ups and downs. And as you said right now, is that rough vision of where I'm heading. And of course, in between, there's a lot of unexpected things that happen. So I need to keep that vision flexible. But at the same time, I know that there's a certain direction, right? And this is what, in a way, allows me to take opportunities as they come and to decide also what are the opportunities that I'm gonna focus on next and what are the things that I'm gonna leave aside. And with this, I want to create a segue onto time management and your book specifically. You know, in your book, you speak specifically about time management for creative individuals, right?
Yeah.
And what do you think, in your opinion, sets apart time management for creatives from other conventional approaches?
Yeah, maybe if you have really the time management gurus, and I think they're really structured in how you should do. So they say, yeah, get up at 5 o'clock in the morning, then go to the gym, and then come back. And they really structure everything without thinking we're all humans and we are out. We are not robots. We have different kind of feelings. You have good days, you have bad days. You have moments, you have ideas, you wake up with all kinds of ideas in your head, and sometimes you wake up with all kind of a blur. So I think if you talk about time management for creative people, you shouldn't also do what feels good for you. If you're a night person, just create some kind of environment that you can work at night. But if you're a morning person, create something that works in the morning for you. Is that an answer to your question? No, the difference is I think we are more free, but I think to organize that, it's good to think about your design process or your creative process. What do you need to come to that end? And one of the things, look, we're not have conventional jobs in a way. We go into an office and we're doing our job and we work through our list and we make our reports or something like that. Every assignment, every client is different. So we have all the time different approaches. But so you can have some kind of way to deal with your clients. But that's something you have to investigate. But I think one of the things that really works for me is to, as soon as you got ideas, to quickly make sketches to see how could it work out if you were there. So if we both had, for instance, Peter van Blokland as a teacher, I think. But he told me that, and that was really some opening, some eye opening. Give yourself 5 minutes or 10 minutes to do this whole project. That's not possible because you need much more time to do it. But at least see how far you can come in 10 minutes. What do you need? So you can already sketch it. You can make some prototypes and you have something to talk about. You have already something to talk to, go to your clients, to your colleagues. Say, hey, I think about something like this. Can this work? So, and I think that's the beauty of creativity. You have a pencil and you can start designing wherever you are, actually. So that's... But what we tend to do is that that's a way, like you have a tiny tree, you have a seed and you have a tiny root and you have a little tree. You have to think how does a tree grow? A tree doesn't grow with a lot of roots in the air, then piles up in one time. No, it grows in circles all the time, getting a little bit bigger. So if you start with a 10-minute project, the next time you can go on and say, okay, now I give myself 1 hour to do this whole project. And so I have already an idea. If I do this, it should look like this. And then that way you can work on three different solutions for the same project in 3 hours, so to say. Then you can have something to present or go back or to manage, and without investing days and days of time in one solution or one thing. And then your client saying, well, no, maybe that's not what I'm looking for. But the moment you have a lot of different ideas and quickly go to your client or to your teacher or to whoever, to discuss the things and get feedback, and you can adjust the project and do it maybe again.
Yeah, and I think that that's something that we all struggle with, like especially creatives and our listeners, illustrators, myself. I think we always want to be in the flow. We like being in the flow in the moment where we sit down and we get to work and we are like working for 3 days straight on creating that logotype or that lettering piece or whatever it is that you're working on. And I think it's so important what you're saying right now in that sense of like, okay, first you need to test an idea to see if it's worth pursuing, right?
Yeah,
so first you need to like start with a very simple scheme and a few small steps so that you can understand whether this is something that is worth investing all the time in, or you'd rather go in another direction, right? So I hear also that you speak a lot about time blocking and kind of like assigning a certain amount of time to a certain project and to exploring certain ideas. So how do you think that time blocking plays a role in making a better use of our time as creatives?
Because you give yourself some dedicated focus. Mostly I'm coming to the office and then I try to spend a little bit focus time for myself to do some research or something like that till everybody's in. And well, all the conversations start and we have meetings and calls and then that goes on for the whole day. So I know at the end of the day, I've mostly 1 hour left. And that's a really powerful hour for me at least, because I use that hour to do something, to design something new, or to just use it as a sketch. I really like it that it's you know, okay, I have to leave at 5 because I have to pick up kids, etc. So this is my hour, this is my time. And for some reason that works, because you know, okay, at the end, I want to have something that I want to send away to my colleagues or someone else can work with it or can give feedback on it.
Yes, it's funny because you mentioned a lot family life and how as you started a family, you started being more intentional or more conscious about the use of your time because you just don't have that much time when you are, at least for work, when you have a family. And I have experienced that myself firsthand. And I have to say that I came to your book many years ago. And it really changed me. And it really changed me not only because, as you said, the concepts that you present in this book are tailored for creatives, which we go about life and productivity in a different way, but also because it took me down, like in a way, down the rabbit hole of like productivity books. So I read a lot of different books about productivity, and that was very instrumental in helping me set a few boundaries for myself. I remember that at that time I was juggling several client projects at the time. I was traveling for speaking engagements. I had already a team actually at the time, and I had my two kids with me, like small kids. And I felt that I had no system to go about my day and my time whatsoever. So I thought, you know, your book helped me in a way to intentionally, you know, book my calendar in a way that it helped me reach my goals and, you know, create this or achieve this vision that I had for myself and for my business. And I wonder if you can share with us, and in the book you speak about a specific method, which is the to don't method. So I would love for you to explain to me and to our listeners, what is this method about?
Yeah, to be honest, I was reading on LinkedIn that time because I had to manage my time better. So there are a lot of posts on LinkedIn where you can read about time management. That's why I came across all the gurus. I said, but this is not going to work. And then one post was out called, and I never could find it back, but it was a long time in my head. And it was called, you can also make a to don't list. So to decide, okay, this is my list of all things I have to do. And these are subjects I'm not going to do. I put them on my don't list. And then you came across this story about a general, and she had a workshop in the Pentagon in the US. Mm-hmm. And there was a story about, and there were all male generals, and they were asked, can you describe in one sentence how you manage your time? And none of the generals could do it. Only she could do it. She said, well, it's quite simple. I just make a list of all things I have to do, and then I cut it off after the third item. And that was really, so if you do that, you really pick, okay, so you really have to make, okay, which three things are really the most important to do now? So if I'm, and you can do this on all different kind of levels. So you can say, for instance, on a work level, okay, I'm going to only do topography things, and I'm doing this and this, and this is my focus in my studio.
Yeah. So you, in a way, when you start a project, so in regards to the to don't method, when you start a project, you will have all this, long list of things that you could do or that you have to do to realize that project. And then you will start sorting out those that are not necessary or that you don't consider like priority. Or how is that process exactly? How does this look like?
For me, as a designer, as a typographer designer, I always like to say, okay, let's pick one color and maybe one font, and this is the only font I'm going to use to make the design. And then, because making clear choices, it already gives you some kind of direction, and you leave out all kind of distraction. And you have to come up with a solution in this between this boundaries, so to say. And I keep this mindset in a lot of things I'm doing. So can we keep it more clear and simple and find a solution in this?
That's a great
Is it
I didn't
answer your
think
answer?
that
Answer your question. Sometimes
for
I.
sure. And I think that also, like, I feel that this is such an essential part of creativity that we often oversee the fact that we set ourselves limitations. I think that limitations is where creativity is born. And I always encourage students and even our listeners right now to always set boundaries for themselves, because it happens often that I work a lot with creatives that are trying to learn a skill like lettering or letter drawing. And what happens oftentimes that as they sit down to work or to practice, they have such a broad variety of things that they could do next that they don't do anything at the end. It's so overwhelming that they don't even get started. And what has worked for my programs is that I invite them to always have a briefing first. So, and the briefing should have a few parameters. What is this intended to do or to bring into the world? And who is this tailored to? So that they can get started with a few limitations, they can already spark some ideas, right? And and it recently happened to me. We had in the beginning of the year with my team, we had this. Well, actually, at the end of last year, we had this retreat where we bounced a few ideas on what we wanted to do next this year. And there was, we were all interested in creating more in-person events, because in the past years we have had very few of that. And what happened to us when it comes to in-person events is that it's often much more complex than doing it online, right? And this is what holds us back from doing it, because there's so many things that you have to have into account, like renting a space, booking the place, having people traveling to the place, and there's so many logistics involved. And we were wondering, like, how do we do that? Is it gonna be a retreat? Is it gonna be like a live event that we do this way and that way? How much are we gonna charge for that so that it makes sense? And last week, 2 weeks ago, I came up with the idea of not even thinking about this, not even thinking or planning ahead or like booking a place. We sent an email to our email list. I'm gonna travel to Barcelona tomorrow, which was a flight that was already booked, and we sent an email to our email list of people who are living in Spain, and we told them, "Hey, I'm gonna be there next week. Let's all get together to have breakfast. There's 20 spaces available. We're gonna book the place for all of us. Who is coming?" And the event was booked out. We are gonna meet this Friday with all these people. And the logistics were were so simple. We didn't have to think about the content of the event. We didn't have to think about how we're gonna do it, which place are we gonna do it in. It was everything so easy. And as you said before, the goal was to bring people together and to connect with our students and with our community. So at the end of the day, we kept it simple and we still reached the goal of bringing people together. So I can so much resonate with what you are saying right now of like, okay, what are the things that, what are the things that I can leave out so that I reach this goal?
Yes, exactly. And well, during another time, well, I think 10 years ago, I ran another studio, and we had a lot of people say, "Yeah, let's drink some coffee." And at a certain moment, they say, okay, let's not drink coffee, let's have lunch. And we invite you to come over to our studio to have lunch. So we decided to make this project, say, and people really like, oh, we can have lunch and we can come to the studio. So we could just have our work there, and we had to lunch anyway. So let's invite someone and give them some sandwiches or have some lunch, and we can talk during that lunch. And after the lunch, we go back to work, and they go also back to their work without spending your whole morning to go somewhere to drink some coffees and then go back and have also lunch again, but you're lost all your morning.
Absolutely. Yeah, and in a way connects you with potential clients or potential collaborators. This is something that I also really loved about your book, that it not only speaks about productivity strategies or a productivity system for creatives, but also speaks about this out of the box thinking of going out of your head when you have a certain limitation, or when you think you are not a salesperson, what other things can you do so that you still achieve your goals, right? So you speak a lot about not limiting yourself and doing, everything that you set yourself to do, you can create it, right? And you can actually achieve it. And I love that about that mindset, that it's not only about being intentional about the way you use your time, but also about not limiting ourselves in our mind. Because oftentimes we said I cannot do that. I cannot even start doing that because I won't be able to achieve it. So how do you think that plays a role in productivity? Beyond the system, how do you think the mindset of creatives and how they set limits to themselves plays a role in achieving your goals or being more productive or making a better use of your time? I selected a quote from your book that says, it's from Mary Kay Ash, and it says, "Don't limit yourself. Many people limit themselves to what they think they can do. So you can go as far as your mind lets you. What you believe, remember, you can achieve." And I wonder why did you bring that a specific mindset into a productivity book? Because a productivity book is more about if we think about it, productivity book is more about having a system to make a better use of your time so that you can get better results.
No, I'm thinking about it. It's also good. Productivity is also achieving things and doing things. So use your time. And if you have some ideas and want to do this, we quite often say, "Oh, I can't do this," or "I don't have time for it." But you also say, "Yeah, just go for it. Just do it and see what happens." And maybe we find out it's not working at all. So you can always stop it or not doing it. But it's always easy to find reasons not to do it. But also just go with the flow and say, okay, I'm going to do this and see what happens. And yet a long time ago, you had a TV series, Pippi Langkous. I don't know if that's the right international word, but it was a kid and she lived in a very big house and she could do everything. And she said, for everything new she did, so she said, well, I've never done it, but so I think I can do it. And that's a kind of approach. Yeah, just to think, I have this idea, I want to do this. Also, maybe when we start writing the book, I've never wrote a book before, but that, yeah, let's start writing this book and do it. And then, well, I've the big luck that I have, my wife is a very good editor and copywriter. So after a while, she asked me, what are you doing actually? I say, oh, writing a book. Says, yeah, well, these are a lot of nice stories you're writing and a lot of nice ideas, and maybe can talk about it, but it's not really a book. So she made it into a book, and maybe that's something else I want to maybe can bring up. That's also a good work with people that help you to become better, and sometimes working together can help you to achieve your goals in a better way. Without If you do it all by yourself, you're on that isolated island. But it's nice to work with other people, so you come to places where you never have been, so to say.
That's such a good reminder because we tend to as I said before, we tend to love being in the flow in this little bubble where we sit down and work and we are in our world. And I think it's so such a good reminder to just connect with other people, because I always say that no one does it alone. Even if you try to, you will always need other people to help you, to look over your shoulder and give you feedback, like your wife did with your book. So you will always need that external look over your work and your project. So tell us a little bit about the book you're working on right now, which is coming out in May. You told me that it's gonna go to print next month, and it's called If You Don't, Saving the World by Doing Nothing: Economics for Creative People. What is it about?
Well, it's about saving the world, but using the to-don't list methods. And it was some kind of a dare that was in my head for a long time. And I was thinking, oh, what's my role as a creative? What can I do? What should I do something? Because it's easy to design a new poster and post it on Instagram and say, okay, this is my part. But yeah, in a way, I was also using the to-don't list. The idea, if you don't do anything, maybe you need less resources if you cut out. Because, yeah, as designers, we're always in our bubble on our designing islands. I think, yeah, we make something beautiful, but it has also, then we put it to a client, and the client is doing something, or start making prints, or start making t-shirts and all kind of stuff, and it goes in the world. So it has a big afterlife, what you're doing, but also you're using maybe resources, and you're a big part of the whole system, everything that is around you. And I thought it might be good to be aware of what's happening if you say, I don't do this, so what will happen after that? And that's what the book is actually about, and trying to get some idea of how's the world, how's the system, how's the economy working. Because when we think about economics, it's most of the time we think about, oh, that our people are, we're talking about profit and making more money and doing something else. But economic, actually, the original word is we're taking care of, it means taking care of your household. So that's why it's come. You're running your house. Also, the way you're running your studio is some kind of economics, the economics of running your studio. And so that was more inspiring for the book. Say, if we use this whole planet as kind of boundaries, so we're all here together, we can't go off, so we should manage it together. And what is the role we can do as creatives? And I try to find it out, to figure it out. Can we come with solutions that are actually helping the future?
And give us a peek into the book. What are some of the things that we as creatives can do to save the world? Give us three of them at least. I bet there is a lot more inside the book.
There's a lot more, let's. It seems that a lot of people are willing to do stuff, but they need some little nudging. So I think what we can do as creative is try to nudge them in some kind of right direction. So for instance, they find out if you call something vegan, a lot of people say, hell no, I'm not going to do this. If you call it something plant-based, a lot of more people are saying, I'm willing to use plant-based stuff. It's not called vegan, so don't sound that disgusting. Plant-based sounds good. It's just made of plants. And then when you call it healthy stuff, a lot of more people, so it's really because it's not called vegan, or people don't have any reference to vegan, but to healthy stuff, and everybody wants to be healthy. So that's something we have all in common. We all want to be, the end result, we want to be healthy. So we can have creatives, we can help by doing some kind of nudging or this kind of stuff.
Or telling the story differently, in a different way, in a way that that resonates more with people. That they take action, huh?
Exactly, and there's a lot of research in the streets that if you take out the cars, that streets all come to life. And that people are starting moving more, they're going to bike, they're going to walk, they're going to play outside, they're going to have more contacts. So in a way, they will be happier, and it will be also, again, healthier. Yeah, so that kind of examples we're trying to tell in the book.
Donald, to wrap up the podcast, first, I want to say that I'm really looking forward to your book. So let us know when it's coming out. We will surely share that with our audience. What would be some advice that you will give creatives? So those that are starting their creative journey, what are some of the mindsets, or the one mindset or time management hint that you can give to creatives when it comes to navigating their careers and navigating the path towards achieving that vision, that goal that you mentioned in the very beginning? What is the one thing, if you could mention one thing that you would recommend to them to have into account or to keep in mind when they navigate their careers and their creative paths?
Always the thing that really pops in my mind is go do it. And just see what happens. But if you never do it, never dive into it, there's always some reason not to postpone it or do it another time or keep dreaming about it. But there's only one person who can do it, and that's you. Just sit there and like you said, yeah, you're going to get your VAT number, etc. Just start your business. Go on and spread the word. Maybe that's the most important thing. Tell people you're there. And that you have this idea, but please, the worst thing that could happen is that nobody responds to you. Well, then you also know, well, maybe this is not for me, but at least go. And then during the way, yeah, that's the most important. If you never start, you never will finish. That's maybe the thing I could say. And keep in mind, a lot of advice is also bullshit, but just go, take what you can use and go. That's my advice.
That's amazing, Donald. Thank you so much. Where can people
Yeah.
find you?
They can find me online. I think I like Instagram and yeah, actually I like Instagram. That's my place.
What's
At
your
Bureau
Instagram
Donald.
handle?
At Bureau Donald.
Okay,
So that's
amazing. So, Bureau is with Bureau,
yeah.
right?
Yeah, something like that. Are we still recording, or are you going to put it in the show notes?
I'm gonna add it to the show notes for sure.
Okay. No.
So, any other place where people can find you?
Yeah, I have my website, of course, bureaudonald.com. Actually, I'm working on a new website, but that's still somewhere on my to-don't list. So sometimes I pick it up, and then other things come up. But yeah, for now these are the places, and I'm seeing. And maybe I'm going to do something on Substack, but I have to see. For now, that's still on the to-don't list. First, finish the book. That's my most
Oh,
important
yeah.
goal now. That's on top of my to-do list, and everything else is on my to-don't list.
Amazing. So we are waiting for it, and we will be in the lookout for your new book. Thank you, Donald, for being here today, and
Yeah,
thank you,
thank you for
everybody,
inviting.
for tuning in, and see you on the next episode of Open Studio. Bye bye. So this is it. I hope you loved this episode. You can find me, the host of the show, on social networks at Martina Flor on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook. If you have a question or comments, go to martinaflor.com/podcast, where you can see previous episodes, find show notes, and send voice memos with your comments and questions. You can also watch these episodes on YouTube. Just go to martinaflor.com/YouTube to find them. You can, of course, listen to all our episodes on your favorite podcast platform. If you loved this episode, subscribe to this podcast. And if you leave us a review, it will help others find us. Thank you all for listening, and see you in the next episode of Martina Flor's Open Studio. Bye bye.